right, welcome everybody. This is the Dirt Reporters for the week of April 10th, 2024. Geez, I'm going back a month already here. No, we are in April and we are into racing now. Racing has started, and joining me again is Kyle McFadden, our staff reporter for Dirt on Dirt. And also back for the second straight week is Aaron Clay. He's our Arizona Arizona-based weekend editor for Dirt on Dirt. And last week he talked about the race wires and doing results. And this week we'll have another interesting topic. I think he's a connoisseur of this, I guess, too, that we'll be talking about a little bit later. But first things first, let's just talk about the big story of the weekend. This past weekend was the sweep of the XR Super Series Spring Thought Volunteer Speedway in Tennessee by Mike Marler. $42,000 sweep of the weekend. He won Saturday's 60-lapper. That was for $30,000. And then he came right back on Sunday. He won the race that was supposed to be on Friday but was pushed to Sunday for another $12,000. Led Devin Moran across the finish line in both races. And man, this is something he is getting on a roll here now. Ever since he struggled a little bit during speed weeks, he had some good runs, not some bad runs. He just was kind of getting his feet wet, it seemed like, with the Skyline Motorsports team. But ever since he won that Golden Isles race, the Lucas race that was after the speed weeks, immediately after the 500 Daytona 500 weekend, man, he's had nothing but podium finishes. Six races, six podium finishes, three wins. 2 seconds, a third, pretty darn good. Kyle, do we see a guy here now that's going to be starting to get on the, he settled in with Skyline Motorsports and he's going to start, and he might be the guy of like a Ricky Thornton, Bobby Pierce of last year that could be the man this year?
He's off to one of the best starts in his career, I would have to say now, and he certainly feels that way. I talked to him after the Atomic in Brownstown weekend, and I could even feel after Atomic when he finished second there to JD, led some laps, cautions didn't really fall his way. He was still picking up steam and he was still feeling very good about where he was at going into this stretch that we have now seen for him. So I absolutely think so. And he's received two first place votes too in our top 25 polls. So voters are certainly taking notice and people are certainly putting him up there among the best, and if not the best right now. So after Golden Isles for him, I mean, he was gone for about 2 months on the road because he started the year out in Votto. I was there for all six races for that. And I just felt like, you know, his speed weeks, how it went, like the way it did, he just raced so much. He could never really, I feel like once you have a few off nights, you know, you get a little bit behind, and that's all that it takes, you know, these days to just be a 8th to 12th place car. I didn't think he was all that far off during speed weeks, but he has his mojo back. Took one of his race cars back to Longhorn ever since then. That was after the Golden Isles win, or maybe it was the week before that, but it was around February. He's been clicking, and so he said he's building a brand new race car too before the Lucas Oil Series picks back up in our northeastern states, in Delaware, Port Royal, and then Hagerstown too. So, he's clicking at the right time, and everything is certainly working for him. And impressive field too this past weekend at Volunteer, so he didn't have to, or it wasn't like it was a cakewalk or like a breeze in the park, you know? So, he's rolling right now and he's certainly up there with the best.
Yeah. Four wins now he has this season, including that one semi-feature at Volusia during the Dirt Car Nationals, and 5 second place finishes also. He's got second places at Votto, 2 of them, East Bay, Florence, Atomic.
Yeah, six podiums,
so he's been in the mix quite a bit. I mean, yeah, he's been right in the mix. And Aaron, you're a stat guy, right? You know, you're the a results oriented guy here when you're doing your race wire updates and all. How are you kind of viewing these this six straight podium finishes. I don't think you see that from too many drivers. I mean, when if you put up six straight, you know, at different racetracks too, against different competition, that's meaning something. There's some meaning behind that. Like you got something going on.
Oh, absolutely. And he's just cementing himself as one of the best right now in the country, racing dirt late models. And you love to see it because, you know, when a guy changes teams like he did, you don't really ever know, you know, will that magic still be there? Will he still be up front? So clearly Mike Marlar showing it doesn't matter what team he's driving for. You know, you put him in a fast car, he's going to put it up front. I did note that Richard Allen reported Dale McDowell lost his drive shaft on Saturday. And that's kind of what opened the door for Mike. Obviously, you know, Mike earned it, no doubt. But, you know, if that didn't happen, if that mechanical failure didn't happen, it would have been interesting to see, you know, if McDowell maybe could have held him off. But either way, you know, still a great start to the year for Marlar. I was talking with one of his biggest fans, Jeremy Tidwell. Shout out to Tidwell, huge Marlar fan. But we noticed the 157 font is a little different now. They rewrapped it. And so it was kind of like a, you know, moment of silence for the Ronnie Delk 157 days. So it's a new era for Mike Marlar, but it's not a bad era. He's coming out strong this year, and, man, the sky's the limit for him, it looks like, this year.
Yeah, he is. Mike Marlar is he's 46 years old. Just turned that a little bit, you know, earlier this year. And so he's kind of in that little bridge of between the young guys and the guys that are already to 50, you know, but he's not a guy that seems to me, I don't see him as a guy that has trouble getting up on the cushion and running this hard, real on the gas way that you need to run right now in this day and age that it's kind of developed into with these younger drivers coming up. He seems like he's very adaptable to that. And that's what's so makes me think that he could really have a great year. He's going to rerun the Lucas Oil Series, and he has the resources. I mean, Kyle, I'm sure you agree with me here. I mean, there's not team. He feels he's always had good stuff with Ronnie Delk. And he also said, though, that he never really tested as much as he needed to, like, be resources to do that little extra, I guess. And with Greg Brunig fielding that car, he has the resources, and I think that's going to mean trouble for the team. There were some people that maybe they thought like, yeah, the speed weeks wasn't going to be, you know, if he doesn't get through speed weeks and get going again, maybe it didn't work. But I kind of felt like this is a team that it just picked up right where you left off with Ronnie Delk. Got the same people working on the race car. He takes care of it. Same equipment. All he has is just more resources now, and that's going to be that's going to really help him. I mean, what's your thoughts on that angle there, Kyle?
Every race team, even the best in the business, they go through their little slumps or like their little ruts. And so the biggest part is just like finding a break in the schedule to reset, build a new race car, go through their race car, go through their resources. We've seen it happen with every driver throughout the history of our sport. So when, like, Mike Marlar, he was on the road for two straight months. Like, he didn't go back to the shop. Like, he was in Votto and then went straight to Volusia the very next week, and he was there all the speed weeks. So the real turning point for him, you know, as I had said, he went back to the shop, he regrouped, took a car back to Longhorn, and now he's seeing the benefits of that. And so I never really doubted, you know, his season based off of speed weeks. And he's also hasn't been the greatest at speed weeks either over the years. He'll admit that. I think his last win prior to Golden Isles in late February was 2019. So it's not like he went down every year, or he's gone down to speed weeks every year and has like flourished, like a guy like Brandon Shepherd or some of the others in the sport who just go down and make good money down at speed weeks. But yeah, also, too, like, he's lost a little bit of weight, and he sees a trainer. He has a trainer, and, you know, he's really prioritized his health and working out more, you know, as he said. I think he told me one time, you know, as he turned – once he turned 40, you know, he was really being conscientious of, you know, his health and his diet, and he's taking it as seriously as he ever has, and it's really showing, and, you know, he's learning, too, to – adapt a little bit with some of like the younger guys who want to get up on the cushion and just push the cars like hard as they can. So, you know, he's really finding ways right now to get the best out of himself and his race team, and it's showing. And it's interesting too, you know, to see the roster on the Lucas Oil Series, and you have to add him into the top four now, right? With how he's running. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out as the busy race season gets underway.
Yeah, so I'll ask you, Aaron, what do you think? I mean, can we lock him into a top four spot for Lucas Oil Series at the end of the year? And I mean, his ceiling there, that's got to be a championship. I mean, he's already won a World of Outlaws title, and the first time he ever ran the World of Outlaws back in 18. So man, that would be a good account. Not too many, you know, there's only that handful that have won both of the national tours. So, he looks like he is set to make a good run for it.
He's definitely going to be in the conversation. I think that's kind of maybe where the line is drawn with Mike's season so far, though, is we haven't really seen that success from him in the Lucas Oil events necessarily. Obviously he's consistent, he's fast, you know, he's winning a bunch of races that maybe aren't Lucas Oil sanctioned, but you know, with Lucas Oil, you obviously have Davenport, you have Thornton, you have Moran. So, you know, maybe he's that fourth guy in there, but you know, that's where I would probably
draw the line. I mean, there's the Rocket Chassis House car there too, Aaron. I mean, we forgetting about that one or what?
Not forgetting, but, you know, McCready, you know, he'd probably take a little time to get used to that new ride and hopefully, you know, kind of find the sweet spot on that one. But I would love to see that. McCready and Marlar battle it out for that fourth spot. I think that's a good storyline too.
I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, again, we talked about it a few weeks ago here, just kind of the reset of the series. But, man, it's already definitely different than what we thought before the races started in January because of Hudson, you know, leaving the team, McCready switching over to the Rocket Chassis. I mean, man, talk about a scrambled up Lucas Oil Series this year. And it's going to be definitely interesting to keep watching this as it develops. And man, I just have a feeling here with Marler's looking really, really strong. I think he will have his best season ever. I think we even mentioned that earlier, even in Fast Talk, but let's keep an eye out on Marler. One other thing from the weekend we have to touch on. Kyle had the best comment, I guess. I know Kyle Bronson, his team thought like his Fast Talk comment on what happened at East Alabama on Saturday in the Spring Nationals when Kyle Bronson and Zach Mitchell were battling for the lead. Traded some sliders there in the last couple laps, and then Bronson got the last one in through 3 and 4, and he sort of slowed down in 4 to break the momentum of Mitchell's crossover move. They came together a little bit. Bronson held on to win. That was like the controversial finish of the weekend, I guess, or definitely the most dramatic finish of the weekend. And Kyle, how did you view that? You viewed it like you had a good view of it in your Fast Talk answer.
My thing is he cleared him like it's fair game. He cleared him. It's not like he sideswiped him at the apex of the corner or even exiting the corner. He cleared him 100%. He stopped just a little bit too. You can go back and watch the replay, and he slowed down just enough to break his momentum. And at that point, I mean, he has the race won. So if I'm Kyle Bronson, and you know, people have to realize, like, these drivers, they race for their paychecks, right? Like, he's racing for that 10-figure payday. And also, Zach Mitchell is too. And I don't know how much it paid for second, but it had to pay no more or less than $5,000 or $6,000, you know? So, I mean, there's a big difference there. And I know that Bronson hadn't won since last July at Fairbury in the Falls Cup, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm in that opportunity – or if I'm in his shoes, I'm doing the exact same thing. And so, like, I coach basketball, and I make some basketball references on here just because as a competitor, like, always looking for just a little bit of an edge, right? And it also goes to say, like, you know, you race others how you want to be raced. So I don't want to say that Bronson has one coming for him if he ever races Zach Mitchell again, but I mean, Zach's going to take note of that, and he's just going to race him that much harder, you know? So, but it's fair game, and I don't have a problem with it at all. It's good, hard, clean racing. A lot of people are talking about it, and it's good for the sport in those moments. It wasn't anything dirty or like egregiously bad. It wasn't even bad to begin with. So, you know, people have their opinions, and But it was fair. He cleared him, and that's all that matters to me when I'm observing something like that, a race there toward the end. But it was everything that you could have asked for, and I don't think anybody can disagree with that, right? Right, guys.
Hey, Bronson was sniffing a win. I mean, he was like, he was close to a win, and he was going to do what he had to do, I think, to get. I mean, like, hey, maybe if he'd been not off to a great start this year, maybe if he finished last year strong, it hadn't been since mid-July since he won a weekly show at Fairbury was his last win.
That's right.
I mean, yeah, think about what happened to him at Volusia. He came out of Volusia. He had hurt. He had no motors left. He probably wouldn't even have. He might not have even have raced the last night at Volusia in February if they would have run that night, if that wouldn't have been rained out, because on Friday he pulled out early in the night because his stockpile was out of motors. So he had a really rough speed weeks, and man, he was able to regroup. Man, a good job by him to get back on it. And when you have that kind of struggle and you've been that long without a win, I mean, you're going for it, and he wasn't gonna, you know, he wasn't gonna like back off and take it easy on that one. Aaron, you know, you watching that video, you could see that he was gonna be aggressive.
No, he was going all out for it, and he needed the win, like you guys said. And you know, the only thing I wish because he even said in this post race interview that he did slow up in the middle of the corner to try to prevent Mitchell from crossing him back over. Because they had just exchanged sliders, you know, multiple times the previous couple of laps. But Bronson changed up what he was doing. You know, he slowed down a little bit in the middle. So Mitchell likely, he would have had to slow down as well to try to turn underneath him. So I would have liked to see that, you know, potential. But, you know, Mitchell was probably a little bit frustrated. And, you know, that's when he kind of ran into the back of Bronson, which we've seen that happen numerous times over the years. But at the end of the day, I wish they would have kind of maybe been side by side at the finish line. You know, that would have been the ultimate, you know, cool finish. But at the end of the day, I don't blame Bronson one bit for what he did. He did what he needed to do to win. And I don't think it was dirty, just like Kyle said. You know, it's not like he slid into this door. He cleared him. He just happened to slow up in the middle of the turn and prevented a crossover move. So hat tip on that move. And also props to Zach Mitchell. He's obviously, you know, starting off the year pretty good too, regionally. He had just dominated an Ultimate Southeast race at Cherokee with a pretty, you know, pretty stout field of competitors. So he's actually, you know, he's looking like he's going to be one to contend with there in the Southeast, you know, regional races.
Yeah, right. Zach, he's become one of those guys in the Southeast that you got to look for. And then when the big, you know, when the national tours come in too, he could easily, I mean, I seen him win an outlaw race at Bulls Gap, you know, that was 4 years ago already. That was one of those first ones that was after the COVID, everything started opening up again. And I remember going down there, and he ran a great race to win that national tour show at Bulls Gap. But I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. Let's go to our main topic of the week. This is going to be we want to talk about something that we brought up in the Fast Talk, in our Fast Talk article this week. It was our last question. I asked everyone, I mean, Aaron wasn't in Fast Talk this week, but Kyle was. And I asked everyone, let's do a wardrobe check in our closets, in our dresser drawers. And it's how many racing-related T-shirts we have. You know, obviously, racing T-shirts are huge. You know, like I'm everybody. You can't go to a race without seeing racing T-shirts or being kind of, you know, bigger races. T-shirt trailers are all over, and these drivers make some good bucks now. You know, I mean, they can even sell them online. So their marketing ability of their T-shirt and merchandise has even gotten bigger in recent years. And we're, you know, I mean, we're not going out there buying driver shirts all the time, you know, but because we're unbiased. We just want to, you know, we're covering races, but we have a plenty of racing shirts. And I counted up, mine was 61. I had 61 shirts. I think it might be give or take a couple. I think there might be a few more, because I think there might have been a few in the laundry that I hadn't even included in this. But that was just short sleeve racing shirts that I have in my house, and which I kind of looked at. I'm like, my God, that's way too many. What the heck am I doing here with all these? I can't even. How am I going to wear all those shirts? But how about you guys? What's your inventory of racing shirts that you guys have? You start with Kyle there.
So as you can see, I'm not home right now. I'm in Ohio on my way out to the Illini 100. Saw the eclipse on Monday.
Oh, that's right. Exactly. I would have
counted all of my racing shirts, but I'm on the road right now. But I will say I have probably easily over 50, if not 70 or 75. So it's, you know, there's one shirt though that I value, I feel like, above the rest, and that's the 2001 Eldora Million, the original Eldora Million t-shirt. And I found this t-shirt last summer when I was at Farmer City for the Summer Nationals. There's this one guy, I forget his name, and the t-shirt vintage apparel business that he has, but I was going through like the Midway out on the front stretch or behind the front stretch grandstands at Farmer City, and I'm just like moseying around, and I see some t-shirts hanging out front of his like t-shirt trailer, and I'm just like going through the t-shirts, and I'm like, whoa, like this Eldora Million shirt's $15, like original and all of that, and I'm like, there's no way. And so I found that one last year, and it's definitely stored away safely in my closet, and so, but it's you know, as a reporter and such, it's like, obviously there's like the fine line and balance of like, I don't go really out of my way to buy t-shirts like from drivers, but I'll find deals like that and like vintage t-shirts and you know, some NASCAR tees too, and just like anything, like if I'm looking for a t-shirt, I like the bright colored, extravagant, like the graphics explode like off the t-shirt, and so I love wearing those kinds of t-shirts, and I wear them. I try to wear my shirts as much as possible away from the racetrack, because it's a good conversation starter, and people ask about them all the time, and so I think that we have some of the best designers in dirt track racing, you know, like when it comes to t-shirts, and like, you know, this isn't, maybe this is definitely going to sound like a knock on NASCAR's apparel. I'm not trying to frame it this way, but it's going to sound like that. I just think that like dirt racing blows NASCAR apparel out the water, like if you're asking me. And so, I think dirt track racing has the best shirts, and you can't convince me otherwise. And I'm sure Aaron's got a boatload of shirts to testify to that too.
Why you got to call me out like that, Kyle? Come on.
No, I mean, you send me your pics of your t-shirts and stuff that you wear. Yeah. And you also post on social media too. So, I mean, yeah. You're out and about with your t-shirts too. You have some Dale Earnhardt stuff.
Yeah, I got some old Dale stuff that I had to throw into my collection. I'm well over 100 shirts. I didn't even count, you know, the other day. Yeah, it's I need more hangers. So I'm like, I avoid like washing some of them just because I don't have a hanger to put it on yet. So I got to get more hangers. That's on me. But now it's fun though. I'm the type of guy where I want to get one at the event though. Like I've bought some online before, but it's just not my thing, because the thing I love is you're out and about, you know, you're out in public, or you're out, you know, at a going to a race, and someone sees your shirt and they comment on it. I love that. You know, I love to have that conversation with a stranger because they happen to see my racing shirt. But I also want to have a story. Oh yeah, I got it at this race. I got it at this event. It was in this year when so-and-so won it. I remember shaking his hand. I want to have that story behind the shirt. So for me, I prefer to get him at the event. And then I try to always remember, you know, some sort of interaction or what stood out to me most about the event that I bought that shirt at. And it kind of just helps to cement that I was there. You know, I was there and I got the t-shirt and I have the story. So I was kind of going through my memory though about, you know, maybe one of the cooler ones I have. And I'd say it was the first one I bought as an adult, because my dad, you know, I had a lot when I was a kid, but my dad bought me a lot, which he actually saved them for me, which was kind of cool. But the first one I bought as an adult was in 2010 at the Wild West Shootout. I saw Jimmy Mars. I think he led the whole race. It was, you know, it took rubber, and it wasn't the best race, you know, probably we've ever seen, but it was a good show. And I went up to him in the pits and, you know, shook a hand, and I was like, hey, you have any shirts? He's like, oh yeah, I got some shirts. So I bought one from him and had him sign it. I don't think I'll ever wear it again, just because I'd probably need to lose a little bit of weight, to be honest with you guys. But I'll probably hang it up one day. I'll probably, you know, either do a quilt or maybe hang it up. You know, I have it still. So it's kind of one of my more prized ones. You know, that thing's coming up on 15 years old. So you got to take care of it.
Oh yeah, those ones that you've had a while. They can only, they only last so long too. They start falling apart a little bit. I know. I had a, I did get a Scott Blomquist shirt in the mid 90s. I mean, it was real. I'm not the real flashy t-shirt guy like Kyle here says. I'd rather I like the ones that finally kind of catch my eye are the more understated ones and not like all the stuff on them. I like the, you know, the just. Maybe it's just something on the front, maybe not even anything on the back, but like I saw a Knoxville Raceway shirt a couple of years ago, and it was just a late model that just said Knoxville Nationals on it. And, you know, it was kind of like an outline of it was it had some good colors on it. I got that one, you know, that's one of the ones I bought because it wasn't too flashy. It wasn't, you know, really, really in your face, but I do remember getting that Scott Blomquist one. Cause again, it was his yin yang, era there in the mid 90s. And I wore that a while, and man, the thing just got so many holes. I couldn't even use it anymore. I couldn't even wear it anymore. I think it's out of circulation now. It's in the garbage somewhere. Couldn't use it anymore, and it had faded. I also bought a Blomquist one in the 90s there. It was a long sleeve shirt. It was his half and half shirt, which I think I wore it on one of our podcasts, maybe a couple, you know, last year or something. But it was that one where, you know, half his face, half the skull, and even it was black long sleeve, and it had it was glow in the dark. Actually, I'm like, man, that's a pretty cool. That was flashy for me, but you know, it was longer while ago though too. I was younger, so and that one I still do have, but there's a gigantic hole in the arm. It's just kind of come apart, you know, so. It's not like I can wear that in public anymore, but you know, so there's plenty of shirts like that I have. And Aaron, you mentioned about like how being when you're out and you just and like it's a conversation starter when you see somebody else having a racing shirt or you have a racing shirt on. I mean, we've got a Disney World a lot, you know, over the years, and that's one thing. I'm like, I always are. I mean, my eyes are like looking at shirts everyone's wearing. I'm like, and if I see a racing shirt, I don't know. I get way too excited about seeing someone with a racing shirt at like Disney World or just somewhere not at a racetrack, off the beaten path. I'm like, look at that. Wonder if I know that person. Like, what's the odds if I know him? Probably, but hey, it might be. I mean, I have bumped into the Winger family, Ashton and his parents at Disney World before when they're wearing their, you know, Gary Winger had his Kaiser Manufacturing shirt on and stuff. So, but Integra Shocks, I think it was. But anyway, I was actually at Disney World not too many years ago, and I see a girl wearing a Kevin Weaver shirt. I told Derek Kessinger this. That's obviously his man. I see this girl wearing a Kevin Weaver shirt, and it was an old one. And we're talking about a Kevin Weaver shirt when he won the UMP title in the 90s, and it was in good shape. And I was a younger girl. I'm like, man, I'm going to be like a creep going over and asking this girl about her T-shirt, but I'm like, I had to, cause it was Weaver. So I asked her and she's like, I'm like, can I take a picture of your shirt? I mean, I was a little creeper there too. Right. Cause I'm like, well, why am I taking a picture? But I'm like, I got a friend, this is his favorite driver ever. And she's like, I'm like, well, do you know Kevin Weaver? And she's like, I have no idea who this is. You know? I'm like, what? Do you ever go up? No, I've never been to a race. I just bought it at a thrift store. It looked cool. So you never know. Sometimes you think it's a racing person when they got a racing shirt on, but now with thrift stores and people selling vintage shirts and stuff, racing shirts, it could be just a vintage shirt like this girl had on. But I did take a picture of it and sent it to Derek. He was pretty impressed. Would have been a nice shirt to have. I almost wanted to ask her if I could buy it, you know. So, but I know what would be your old, Kyle, how about you? What's your oldest shirt you think you have? Like what, like in your stockpile?
Oh man. If it's not the 01 Eldora Million t-shirt, oh man, I bought this t-shirt, this Don O'Neill t-shirt. That might be, I don't know what year it was, but it was definitely, might have been from before 01. I'm not sure, but it has to be those two. I bought that Don O'Neill number 71 t-shirt. It was like white and his classic number 71. I don't even know what year he ran that car. I need to go touch up on my history, but it would have to be, oh my gosh, probably the 01 Eldora Million t-shirt that I had mentioned. And then the Don O'Neill t-shirt that I also bought that same night last year at Farmer City during the Summer Nationals event. And so Yeah, that's probably it for me in terms of like the vintage stuff. What about you there, Aaron?
Well, the
Jimmy Mars one, right? Yeah, the Jimmy Mars one.
Yeah, the Mars one.
That's definitely the oldest one that I got at the actual event, because that's going up, like I said, almost on 15 years ago here. But I did actually just get a Dale Earnhardt Good Wrench number 3, all black, with the is a Lumina, back when the Chevy Lumina was the in NASCAR, if you will, the Chevy entry for the Cup Series. So it had to be mid-90s. I think it was like 94 or whatever like that. So I wasn't actually there to buy it. Obviously, I bought it online. But that's got to be my oldest one. But man, sizes are different for those older ones.
Yeah,
I usually wear an XL, and it does not feel like an XL. So I'm gonna have to put that one to the side a little bit. I'm gonna have to do some work to be able to wear that one comfortably, I think. But I'll get that one in the rotation here before too long. But you know, you touched upon a good point though, Kyle, with these, you know, the kids these days, as we should say, with the vintage shirts. That's all the rage right now, and that's what's tough sometimes. I'll see people out in public with a racing shirt on, and I'm usually a little hesitant about starting a conversation, because sometimes you might find quickly that they just bought it because it looks cool, but they don't know who it is, or, you know, there's no story behind it. That's why, like I said before, I like that story, you know what I mean?
It's interesting, because it's like, I've even seen Odell Beckham, you know, the NFL wide receiver. He posted a photo on his Instagram page. He was working out, and he was wearing a Donnie Schatz t-shirt. And so I find it hard to believe that, you know, he's been to a sprint car race, but maybe he has, who knows, you know? So, you even see like some of these country singers, you see things on social media that, well, you wouldn't expect to see this guy wearing like a racing t-shirt, like a celebrity or even out in public that you guys had mentioned. And so, it's interesting. It's like, where I live back in Maryland, like Frederick, Maryland, I rarely see racing t-shirts on my whereabouts. I mean, I've only seen probably a handful with that in my 20 plus years of living there. And I'll go out to Pennsylvania or even Ohio here, and I'll see at least one person wearing a racing t-shirt a week, probably. Like, I even saw the guy on Monday where I went to go watch the eclipse. He was wearing a Kyle Larson t-shirt, and he actually turned out to be a former sprint car and dirt late model racer. His name is Harry Rhodes, and he raced with Rick Ferkel, a big time sprint car racer in Ohio. And we got to talking about racing. And so he watches the races on Flow. I told him, hey, I work for Dirt on Dirt and Flow. And he's like, no way. So we just got to talking that way, you know, as we're watching this eclipse go down. So, but I don't feel like I have any of those conversations back in Maryland, but it's just like interesting where you go, you know. And, I feel like Ohio and Pennsylvania are, just people have an abundance of racing t-shirts and just like an awareness of dirt track racing. So, yeah, I always try to wear my shirts when I can to start those conversations and to promote the sport. You know, we're all stewards of the sport, and no better way to do that, I feel like, than have an abundance of racing t-shirts, you know?
Yeah, I know some people that have like an unbelievable amount that, I have one friend from New Jersey his name's Joey, and we used to go from races with him. My father and I went to race with him all the time, and he is like the t-shirt buyer. I mean, this guy, I think he's bought as many as 30 t-shirts, I think, in one event, maybe 20 to 30 t-shirts, maybe even 40. I don't even know. Like at Knoxville Nationals, he goes to Knoxville Nationals every year, and he'll buy t-shirts. And I just saw him over Christmas time when I was at my mom's, and I said, he was ready to see, I got to get rid of some. I got them in boxes all over the place. Some of them I haven't even worn. You know, he's got t-shirts that are still in the plastic bags and stuff from buying them at the t-shirt trailers. And I said, man, I got to get over there and take a look at these, because you probably have some gems in there. Cause I want to you guys have looked on, there's several people out there that have you know, their websites, and they're sell Etsy or whatever, and whatever they're selling them on, they just sell all these vintage t-shirts, and they are getting some good. I mean, Earnhardt shirts are typically $100 every time you see them. I always look at this vintage, like, because there's some guys that sell a lot of short track ones too. And I'll see one, man, I see some of these ones that were like Billy Pouch ones, my modified guy back from the late 80s and into the early 90s. Those are shirts I had. I don't have them anymore. Ever since I moved out, you know, from my parents' house, I you know, I think my mom got rid of them, you know, and they're selling for 50, 60, 70 bucks. I'm like, man, why didn't I keep those things? You know, you could sell these things for a lot. And but every time I do look at these sites for vintage shirts, I mean, there's always some that I want. I mean, I keep my eye out. There's one shirt, a NASCAR shirt, that I definitely want. Jeff Bodine was always my favorite driver growing up in the 80s, you know, and I want a Levi Garrett number 5 Jeff Bodine shirt. I got one that was like kind of a knockoff, I mean, on some website, and it's not that bad. But I wanted one of them original. I just have never seen one yet. That's ones I've seen other Jeff Bodine shirts. That's one that I want to nail down. I keep watching for one. How about both of you guys? Is there some shirt, some driver? I mean, it could be any. It could be NASCAR. It could be dirt late model, anything that you would like to be able to, like, get one of them original shirts from back in the day. If you have to see that, you'd want to buy that. If you can grab it, if you see it online somewhere.
I've always wanted, for some reason, a Doug Wolfgang original t-shirt.
How about the Bob Weicker car, man? That would be one, right?
Yeah, you know? Like, there's something mysterious, like mystical, legendary about Doug Wolfgang that is, like, it's hard to put into words. And so it's just like, I met him for the first time last year at Lakeside for the High Limit race, and like, nobody expected him to be there. And it's like, whoa, like, I get to meet the legendary Doug Wolfgang, you know, who hasn't been to a race in over a decade, he said, up to that time. And so it was cool to actually meet him and interview him last year. That's one for sure. And I don't, surprisingly enough, I don't have a Scott Blomquist vintage t-shirt. I feel like in order to be a true observer of the sport, you know, you have to have some Scott Blomquist apparel at some point in time over his career. I just feel like, you know, so need to check that one off too. But those would have to be the two that I have. I'm actively kind of searching for. Yeah.
How about you, Aaron?
I was able to get a Blomquist shirt when he came to Arizona and did the Wild West Shootout. So I was glad I got to check that one off my box. And then you were talking about the Weicker. You talked about the Weicker sprint car entry. I got a Danny Dietrich shirt when he ran Knoxville, and it was kind of a throwback to it. So it's kind of cool because it's like the new age, you know, driver. It's not Wolfgang, obviously, but it has the cool old school look to it. So I kind of like those newer, you know, mashups they do sometimes. But I'd say for me, it's actually outside the dirt world, but I grew up watching, you know, Jeff Gordon and the famous, you know, Rainbow 24 DuPont. So I'd love to get a retro shirt like that. I had one when I was a kid, and I don't know. I obviously didn't make it, but I know they did some reprints, you know, recently. But and I'll keep my eyes out for a retro Jeff Gordon. I think that'll complement my collection well. And eventually, I'm gonna probably have to put a cap on my collection. It's getting out of hand. Like, I'm going, you know, times over a year between wearing shirts. You know, that's kind of, I mean, it's cool because they're going to last a long time because I'm not wearing them that often. But at the same time, you know, I buy them to wear them. I'm not going to, you know, some of the older ones, you know, maybe I'll retire those. But, you know, for the majority of my collection, I'm wearing them. So if I buy it, I'm buying it to wear it. So I don't know, maybe I'll find a decent, you know, vintage throwback. But nowadays, sometimes you got to be careful. Sometimes you get a vintage throwback, it's, you know, the thread on those are a little different. So, you know, just the way it feels and the way it fits you, and, you know, just the longevity of it, you got to keep all that stuff in mind, you know?
Yeah. You might have some dirt on it too, from some old dirt races or something, you know, right? Like, sometimes you see that in those pictures, you look at the close up and the neck's a little bit messed up there. A little bit of dirt's been on that thing. So, but I definitely keep my eye out for, you know, I regularly look at those. I mean, I've seen some few of them that, damn, if it would have been the right size, I'd have bought it. Cause those older ones are a little different in the sizes, but you got to keep your eye out and pick up one when you can. I know there's one of our Zach Yost, our photographer, does a lot of from West Virginia, and he does a lot of stuff at Eldora. Every year he always ends up coming to Eldora with he'll have the 1995 World 100 t-shirt or something. It never fails. He seems like he's always able to pick up something that was online, that was an old shirt from that event that he wears to it. So I always like checking out what he wears. And another guy who always has some good vintage shirts is Brandon Stuhler, Gary Stuhler's son. I'm yes, always like checking what he's wearing when he comes to the races, because he's able to raid, Gary and his wife, they've looked up in their attic there, and they have some old Gary Stuhler shirts up there, and Brandon will throw them on sometimes. I'm like, man, I like that one. There you go. All right, why don't you reprint that? I want a reprint of the Speedy Hayes Gary Stuhler shirt or something like that. So, but t-shirts are, man, That's part of dirt track racing, part of all racing. Everybody likes to get some. I don't know if you've been to a dirt race if you haven't gotten some t-shirts, right? So everybody, exactly, get some shirts and get some even flow shirts out there sometime. I got a bunch of Dirt on Dirt shirts. I looked at that. I mean, probably 10, at least 10 or a dozen of them are Dirt on Dirt shirts from over there. We haven't had any in a while, but I every day whenever I cut my grass, I still wear my first Dirt on Dirt shirt that Todd Turner gave me back in 2000. I think it was 8 when I wrote a Jesse Stovall story for him from Manzanita. I don't know, maybe Aaron might have even been there at that race. It was a November race, end of the year. That was one of the ones that I still have that shirt, got some holes in it. It's been reduced to cutting the grass time, but still kept it just for posterity's sake. So
I said, you gotta hang on to those Dirt on Dirt shirts. Those are getting vintage as well,
I know, exactly. Right. Yeah. We haven't had produced any lately. We got to get some more out there, but everybody, let us know what kind of shirts you like too. We always like to hear t-shirt stories. So let's close it out for the week here. And we'll go to one more thing. We'll start off with Kyle. I mean, which I haven't even mentioned. He is in the ship room again this week.
We're back in the boat.
We know that he's in Ohio when he's in the boat room there. Yes, he just needs to have his captain's hat on, but he doesn't have that yet. He's got to get his sailor's hat. But one of these days he's gonna pop up with
and
that.
Like the Captain Hook mustache too.
We need that.
Put that on.
So, go ahead with your one more thing there, Kyle.
Yeah. One more thing, Ethan Dotson and Coltman Farms Racing, for those who haven't seen, they put out, or not they, Coltman Farms Racing announced on Monday night that they and Ethan Dotson have parted ways. They used mutually parted ways. So haven't gotten to hear any more details outside of that as we're recording this in the afternoon on Tuesday. So hopefully by the end of the week, we'll know more as to where Ethan Dotson's going. I think he's a great racer in the late model world. He's really acclimated himself, so hopefully he lands on his feet here pretty soon. And then interested to see who Coltman Farms Racing tabs for one of their race cars too moving forward.
Yeah, that's too bad. I thought we were gonna see a lot of wins out of Ethan Dotson with that car, because he got a couple that he won in the short time he was with that. So hopefully, he definitely showed he has the talent to do it. Another modified guy, coming in the late models, and hopefully he can find something to keep going. We'll have to see who else who steps into that car. I'll offer my one thing. I'd like to mention about Morgan Bagley, the Texas driver. He won his first race in well over a year in the Comp Camp Super Dirt Series stop at Old Number One Speedway in Arkansas on Saturday night. I mean, he got a little emotional in Victory Lane. It'd been a while. He says you never know when your last win is, and it'd been a while. He went winless in 2023, so I'm really happy for him to get. I mean, Morgan's a guy that I've always liked. He was on the World of Outlaws tour when I was doing the PR. He was a rookie back in 2013, and he's just kind of a laid back guy, but he has a good dry humor. I always like talking to him. He can get you laughing all the time just with some of the little things that he says. So, you know, congratulations to Morgan for getting back on track. And, you know, he's second in points with the Comp Camp Series. Maybe he can make a run at the title. Aaron, why don't you bring us home here with the final one more thing.
Yeah. I jinxed it last week. My one more thing was the MLRA season opener. And they, of course, I think they rained out that same day. I'm like, they heard me talk about it and it rained out. But I'm gonna go back to that well again, because they got a doubleheader scheduled at Lucas Oil Speedway in Wheatland, one of the diamonds in the dirt, they call it. You know, one of the diamond, true diamonds of our sport, if you will. Excellent facility, obviously. But not only to kick off their season, but they're gonna pull some national guys. I think I saw Ricky Thornton Jr. is already planning on being there. Him and Davenport split that weekend last year, so you're bound to get at least a handful of national guys, because they want to get that track time, you know, for the upcoming Show Me 100, you know, later in the summer. So it'll be cool to see that the kick off their season. And then, you know, like I said last week, just a mix of some youthful, you know, rookies kind of getting their start on the season, some veterans that run that regional touring series all the time, and then we'll mix in a few national guys on top of that. So I'm looking forward to it, and both nights will be on Flow Racing. So, you know, I'll be tuned in.
20,000 to win on Saturday night too. I think that's the most they've ever paid. I don't think they paid that last year. I believe it's the first time they're paying 20,000. So pretty good weekend there for guys to, you know, at Wheatland. Also this weekend, let's not forget the World of Outlaws will be back in action at the Illini 100 at Farmer City Raceway. They haven't had that race in a couple years because of the weather. Yeah. So hopefully they moved it back a little bit this year, and hopefully this week, I mean, from what I see so far, it looks like it could be the best weather ever for the Illini 100. We're talking 70 degrees and sunny on Saturday. Knock on wood here. Let's hope that holds out for them, and everyone will see Bobby Pierce back in action against the World of Outlaws. So enjoyed talking about the t-shirts this week, and had Aaron. Thanks for coming back on with us, Kyle. You know, one of these weeks we're going to be having Todd Turner back on, because this sabbatical is done. But so this week, you know, make sure you read our stories. Kyle will be out at Farmer City covering the Illini. Watch our stuff on Flow Racing, and we'll see you. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next week with the Dirt Reporters.